The lungs aren't heavy or waterlogged, and there was no foam in the airways. Drowning doesn't always leave obvious signs, but we'll check for tiny organisms from the river water that could have been inhaled.
Meaning?
Well, normally when someone falls into water, they try and breathe. Whether they want to or not, the lungs pull in water. Sometimes we can find these river organisms in the liver or bone marrow, but I think it's unlikely here.
So you're thinking she was already dead and then dumped in the river?
It's possible.
Dr. Alexander. What do you make of that?
Let's get the head open.
And this is the Science Show on ABC Radio National. In London this time, at the Natural History Museum, which is a wonderful place, huge building, South Kensington. But there's a new part amongst the ancient ones, and this is a brand new laboratory, so new and so delicate I'm not allowed actually to go in but just peer. Heather Bonney, what is it?
This is our ancient DNA facility where we look for DNA in samples that are really degraded, so they're either really, really old or they've been preserved in chemicals that have damaged the DNA. So it's a clean room, which means that people have to change their clothes and put on clean suits that stop anything getting onto any of the surfaces, so that we can prevent as much contamination as possible.
And you're in charge of it?
I am, yes.
I see. And your background is a bit like Nikki in Silent Witness. You look at ancient fossils or recent fossils and try to get the stuff out?
I personally look at more modern human remains and I physically analyse those to try and help with murder cases and things like that. But I also examine remains that we hold here within the museum, primarily to see that what it says on the box is actually what's in the box.
Yeah, that's kind of revolutionised the investigation of murder cases, hasn't it?
To a certain extent, we're still trying to work on it in the UK and raise the profile of forensic anthropologists because a lot of police forces and pathologists don't really know what we do, so don't really know where to go when they get remains like this. And sometimes we find the odd bone that's been pulled out of a river and been left in a property locker for several years because they've just not known what to do with it. And it's usually archaeological material. But when they do find out what we do, they come up with bits and bobs that they've been holding on to for a while and not knowing what to do with.
And on telly, of course, it takes them about 1 hour to extract this stuff. But how long does it take if someone comes into this laboratory and wants to know? How long would you give them?
The most important thing about this lab is that it's purely for the extraction and the setup of their polymerase chain reaction, which is where they multiply up the tiny little pieces of DNA that they want to look at. The actual reaction is done completely the other end of the building so that all those little fragments that they've multiplied don't contaminate any of the extraction process that goes on within this laboratory. So the most important thing for them is that they plan their time very carefully because they can't come back into this laboratory when they've been in the laboratories at the other end because they might have those little fragments on their clothes and things.
There's a chap called Cary Mullis, who's an American who got the Nobel Prize for inventing this. He had a kind of inspired dream. He was a bit of a wild character, as I said, but don't know whether he was on anything. But it's a way of multiplying the tiny amounts of DNA you've got so that you end up with squillions. Plenty so that you can actually do the test, is that right?
Exactly, yeah. You look at target sequences within the DNA strand, depending on whether you're wanting to know what species you're looking at or whether you're wanting to look at familial relationships. So you target the little sequences that are important and carry out the reaction.
And here, your samples, I presume there weren't be too many murder victims coming to South Kensington, really?
No. We're looking at primarily at specimens that are, the maximum we can look at is around 100,000 years old in this lab. Coming up to the present day, we can look at things that are more modern. If they've been kept in formaldehyde in jars, for example, which means that the DNA in them is compromised and they need a particularly sensitive extraction to be carried out.
And humans and animals as well?
Absolutely, humans, animals, any type of organism, plants that you might want to get DNA out of.
As I said, we're looking through the window. If I actually wanted to go in, what would I have to put on and how much would I have to wash or clean myself?
You need to change into a different change of clothes and one which has long sleeves on, and then you have to put on what in the UK we call a scene of crime suit, those little white suits that completely cover you up from head to toe, that are made out of Tyvek, which is a material that repels anything to stop it sticking to it. And then you need a special pair of either clean room clogs or shoe covers over your shoes, two pairs of gloves on so that when you're working in the lab, you only have to take off the outer layer to change your working gloves and you're never exposing skin, and then a full surgical face mask with eye visor over the top.
How much has not taking precaution actually contaminated specimens in the past anywhere? They imagine that they're finding stuff and it turns out to be, you know, Fred wasn't careful enough.
We don't really know the extent of contamination. Now we go to every length to try and demonstrate that samples aren't contaminated. You run blanks alongside your reaction using just the chemicals and no sample so that you can check, obviously, if you're getting any results from your sequencing from the blank, then that's down to contamination. And we also try and have all results replicated in another laboratory so that you can make sure you're both coming up with the same results. But obviously there's a lot of debate, particularly with human work, that some of the results from the past may be down to contamination.
Any idea what's going to come through your lab as the first down the line?
We're not sure yet. We've got all sorts of people interested. We've got someone that wants to sequence DNA from moths. We've got people wanting to look at material from herbarium sheets in botany, so they want to look at the dried pressed plants, and people that might want to look at human DNA as well. So we'll have to see what comes through.
We're used to seeing on telly some of those unbelievable corpses done up with presumably makeup. Are you surprised at how graphic they've allowed things to be at home on telly while you're having dinner?
I'm not too fazed by it, so I don't really tend to notice.
The odd body means nothing to you?
Not really, when you know that it's fiction on the telly. I mean, to me, a lot of them don't actually look that realistic, so I don't find it that unpleasant or gory. I think they need to employ more advisors to tell them what they should really look like.
And not doing it at dinner. Well, thank you very much. When's the place open?
We're hoping to have some people coming through literally within the next few weeks, now that's all fully ready for people to come in.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Heather Bonney, manager of the DNA lab at the Natural History Museum in South Kensington, London.